post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.
Welcome to The Near Post. My name's Eamon Flanagan. We're talking football across the Australian Community Radio Network. With me in the studio this week, two different, if not special, guests, Patrick Paddy-Bordier. Welcome, Paddy.
Hey, how you going?
Great to have you with us. And also Anthony Hatton joins us in the studio this week. Welcome, Anthony.
G'day, mate.
OK, and for Canberra listeners, Peter Fennell will chat with Anthony Hatton and his journey with Players FC coming up in half an hour. But in the first half an hour, we're going to talk Asian Champions League and the wonderful Newcastle Jets. We'll also ask the question, can we have a Division 2 in Australia? And we'll hear from Borroloola Cyclones coach Glenn Thompson, a man leading the way with Indigenous football in the Northern Territory, and it's great to see. We've got all the big issues and quiz dedications and more, and you can catch us or email us on the Near Post, on the Near Post 2 2XX@gmail.com, or catch us the podcast every Wednesday at www.nearpost.blogspot.com. And I should point out we've got nearly 2,000 listeners each week from across the world, and we had an email this week from Costa Rica. Luke, a special welcome. We're going to dedicate the show, Luke, to you and your Costa Rican friends. I know you're big friends of Carlos Hernandez and Jose Lopez, so I hope you're enjoying the show down there in Tica, and it's great to have you listening, fellow fans of the Australian game. And the quiz question this week is, Newcastle Jets made it through to the next round of the Asian Champions League, which was great to see. How many of the Newcastle Jets squad in this tournament, or have played a role in this tournament, were under the age of 23? How many of the Newcastle Jets squad are under the age of 23?
Soccer is in Asia, will they make it to the cup? The near post will wish them luck.
Socceroos will be playing very shortly in the magical month of June. Now, the questions, I'm going to start with you, Paddy. How many of the Newcastle Jets boys are under the age of 23 that made it through to the second round? We'll just flick one out if you've got one.
Right, under 23, I can think of seven, so
maybe. Okay, give me one.
Seven.
Go for it. Just go.
Give you one.
Yeah.
Ben Kennedy. The
yeah, Anthony, you've got...
You? I have no idea.
Yeah, Hope, come on, keep thinking, go on.
Brodie Mooy.
Brodie Mooy, okay, yep. And that's two. Any more?
All right. I think Tarek Elrich, the younger Elrich, he's still...
Tarek Elrich is within
is
the age range, yeah. Keep going.
All right.
You're on your own here, Paddy. He's not helping you much.
Jason Hoffman.
Jason Hoffman, yeah, the goal scorer.
He's done all right.
Yeah.
Oh, I might not. What about Sean Ontom?
Sean Ontom. Well, he didn't play, but anyway, yeah, keep going.
All right. He's,
in the squad.
Thanks,
Paddy. Oh, yeah, go on.
Kaz Patafta.
Kasper Tafta, yep, he played a bit.
Yeah. No, mate, I haven't got a clue.
No more, okay. Anyone?
Okay, I reckon I'm right. Oh, what about Rooney? Unfortunately, not Wayne Rooney, Sean Rooney.
Sean Rooney, well, maybe fortunately the way he scored that goal that he scored, yeah. Marco Jessics, and I think that's about it. I think you do. Oh, Ben Kandrowski, did you say him?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Probably.
Youngest player to get signed to the A-League, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and probably the best of the lot of them, I think.
Yeah,
and
I think so.
I'm predicting huge things for him. He's another Ned Zelich, maybe Paul Ocon, even at this early age. So,
big
and there was some background noise that said Bugs Bunny, but I don't think he was playing that. No, it is a big rap, Ben Kandrowski. Watch this space. He's 17 and he was stunning the other night, and he's getting better every game, I reckon. So and he should be off to the under 20s World Cup, I reckon. Yeah. Okay, we've got some news, Paddy. Let's get into it. What have you got for us this week?
All right. News. Scott McDonald misses another and Celtic lose the title to a blue team.
Josh Kennedy scores twice for Karlsruhe in Germany, but they go down.
Mark Viduka plays, but Newcastle go down.
What is it about Aussies? Harry Kewell scores for Galatasaray again as Gala head for the UEFA Cup.
Jason Kalina is back in Australia. What's he going to do for World Cup training next March, April?
Yeah, I mean, if he's not training with the Gold Coast or playing, then what's he going to do? We'll see. Australia's World Cup launch is set for June the 12th.
Australia's under 20 head to Europe. Coffee Danning, Adam Mooy and James Holland creating and scoring goals. Came third in the tournament in Holland, losing to Ajax in the semi. And lost to Liverpool on penalties.
And interestingly, Adam Mooy was named in the team of the tournament. Not a name that many of us have heard of in Australian football, but stood out with Liverpool Ajax players and named as the player of the tournament. So I think he's with Bolton Wanderers. So one to watch, and he's a centre midfielder at the moment. And also the Australian under-19 girls team had a couple of victories. They beat Finland 4-1, and also a hat-trick of goals in the second game from Angela Fimano and Canberra United's Nicholas Sykes, who's normally a fullback, but she played striker in this game. And unlike Ashley Sykes, her sister, who's a renowned striker, Nicola got a hat-trick, and they beat Finland 7-0. So, good stuff there. And they've still got the playing into Milan in the coming days. And the last piece of news you got for us tonight.
Former Melbourne Victory player Simon Storey is released by Patrick Thistle.
Patrick Thistle. It's a good old, we know it's Patrick Thistle, but everybody calls it Patrick, don't they? So I love to call it Patrick Thistle too, just to join in with those lovely Aussie football fans. Now, Simon Storey played about 50 games, so whether he'll get another contract over there with another Scottish team or whether he'll be back, we'll wait and see. Alrighty, we're going to talk Asian Champions League and Newcastle Jets. Paddy, you watched the game the other night.
Yeah, I did.
What were your thoughts?
It was good. I think the media call it a spirited win. I'd call it a Pim Verbeek special.
A boring defensive win.
Well, to a certain extent, yeah. They got the goal and they held them out. They did really well. Ulsan Hyundai played a very attacking game. They came at him time and time again. Newcastle's defence held them out?
They did hold out. They were a little bit lucky. I mean, there was a couple of times, or maybe 20 times, when Newcastle, Ulsan could have breached the defence. Yep. I mean, there was headers going in left, right and centre, which hit the bar, went over the bar. But still, they held them out. What I really liked was the way the Australian teams are often criticised for not keeping the ball, etc. But I don't think you could charge this Newcastle team with that. I mean, there was one move where they kept it on the left-hand half, rolled it all the way back around the keeper, back the other side, down the right-hand side, and basically Jason Hoffman hit it into the side netting. But it would have been probably the goal of the Australian A-League and Asian Champions League so far.
Yeah, I don't think you can say that of Gary Van Egmond's teams generally. He plays good flowing sort of football. They did okay. They played very well, possession football. It's maybe a sign that we're growing into a decent footballing nation.
Well, they came bottom of the league. So if you come bottom of the A-League and you still manage to get out of the group, OK, they've signed a few new players and they get out of the group. You know, people are quick to criticise the Australian game, but I think if we're getting a team out of that group stage, and look at the age of some of those players. We talked about the young players there. You know, you've got Casper Tafter, Brodie Mooy. I mean, Ben Kantarowski, I mean, I can't give him a bigger rap. I mean, he really is. He's a socceroo in waiting. I mean, it's just a question of time. Will he go to the World Cup? Possibly a bit too young, but I mean, there's no, he really is up there. I mean, if anyone has watched him play over the last 12 months, he's really, his size is getting bigger, he's getting faster, and his skill level is, I think he's on for great things. So, and I'd put him down in, he's another one almost on the mould of Kjell Viduka level.
I think we can't give enough credit to the manager. He had to deal with the wooden spooners. There are a lot of changes in that team. He brought a few new players in, and he's managed to mould them into a decent team that is playing football that they need to play to get through Asia.
And they're a team that you want to watch, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, they do play nice football, and Vignaroli, the Italian, they're trying to sign him as the marquee player. Another a great signing, I think, if he'd stay in the early.
Yeah, I think he's at the level where he can make a really good impact, and he's at the age where he can still produce. He's maybe not as old as some of the marquee players and not as well known, but I think that's maybe to his advantage.
He has got a fair few injuries. Would you be concerned signing him again, given that he hasn't? He plays 20 minutes and then he's off.
Yeah, it's a bit of a concern. If you're looking for a player that can give you a good 20 minutes, he's your man.
Yeah, he is. So would you sign him, though, based on that? I mean, as a marquee? Because we've had a lot of problems with marquee players in the past. Juninho.
No, I wouldn't sign him. And Newcastle, I think, have been hurt by this in the past. You know,
that's
they
true.
Had Jardel, yeah. And they really struggled with him, and they've had other players
Edmund Azzurro is another.
Yep.
Yeah, no, you're right. So it is a big risk. Whether they'll take that risk, I don't know, and it's big money. Ljubo Milosevic, as you say, the human headline.
Yes.
He is fantastic for the A-League, but he only played 8 or 9 minutes, again, hamstring. What do you think about Ljubo?
Well, I think it was an inspired move by him because it brought on Costanzo, who played incredibly well.
Ljubo did it for the team, I love
it. He did it for the team. He continues doing it.
It wasn't that Korean who was running past him at pace and he thought, I've had enough of this. It comes back to another point that Pim Verbeek's probably right. When he said he wasn't good enough for the soccerers, I think it's his pace that really is his problem.
Yeah.
You know, he's clearly good enough on the ball, but his pace, anybody who's watched him would say, well, he's still not completely fit. Put under a bit of pressure there, he's out of the game. So Verbeek's probably thinking, well, you know, he's not ready for it yet.
I think he's absolutely not ready for it. He's been in several teams where he's had major clashes with the coach. I think he's even had a pretty big clash with Van Egmond himself. I remember when he was a young player and he was coming through, and I thought he was going to be our next Craig Moore. I thought he was going to be the answer in defence. Yeah. But yeah, I've got to agree with yourself and Verbeek even.
Yeah, great. Two Australians agree with him. Well, there you go. Anthony, we're through to the next round. The Jets are going to play Pohang Steelers in the next round in a one-off game, which is unusual. We've got a month until that game. So given that there's no A-League happening, there's no players in Newcastle going to be playing any games, they've got 1 month, and then they play that game, and then, assuming whether they win or lose, they won't play another Asian Champions League game until September. But the A-League starts in August. They'll have about 4 weeks to the next game in the A-League. To the Asian Champions League against Pohang, and then they'll have another 4 or 5 weeks to the A-League. How are they going to be come December?
They're almost having to go through two pre-seasons, one for the Champions League, and obviously now one for the A-League.
And they've been playing since probably last June, July, in terms of training, etc. So it's a really long season, and I don't know how they're going to sustain it.
It's long for the A-League. I don't know whether it's particularly long for other parts of the year.
It's not long in terms of games, but it's long in terms of, if they've been going since June last year, they've not had a break, so they're just going to go through probably two years without a break.
One could say that the new teams, the old team is probably not there anymore, so they haven't played since June. All these people are relatively new to the side.
But I guess guys like Nikolai Topol-Stanley, they've been playing elsewhere. So, and I mean, he travelled halfway around the world and back with the Ollie Roos the season before. So, I don't know. I think it's going to have an impact on an already dodgy club. The other thing I'd like to point out is, you know, Newcastle Jets often played good football, but in some of the pitches they play on in Australia, you know, we're often, you know, it's dire. But it was interesting to see them playing on the carpet, and it certainly made a difference.
The playing surface makes a difference if you're a team that wants to play good football.
Yeah, and, well, we'd like to think all Australian teams like that, are we?
No comment.
No comment? You're not on here to make no comment. You're on here to tell me. So I'll tell it like it is.
Absolutely. All Australian teams want to play good football.
Even the Central Coast?
Even the Central Coast.
You knew how to ask that. You're joking. And I know you're joking.
I did see a lot of Sydney FC games last year.
Yeah, but they've had the moments before, prior to Mr. Kuzmina, and, you know, even they were superb in Asia, weren't they? Against Gamba Osaka, who at the time, you know, as we now know, are of the powerhouse of Asia, but they drew with them twice.
Superb in Asia, they're all right.
Yeah. Well, you know, they had some good performances. I mean, given that we're only 2 years in. No? Okay. I thought against Gamba they were particularly, well, they got two draws against them, but all right. We'll question Sydney's performance.
I just think when you compare it to the standard Adelaide and even Newcastle's performances, I don't think that they were superb in Asia. They were good.
Fair enough.
I think Australian teams match up very well in Asia.
They do, and that's another interesting point. A lot of people saying we're a long way behind the Asian game, but I'm not getting that from you, Paddy. You're not feeling that.
I think it's not about being ahead or behind. I think it's different styles, and our style works very well. We have some very big, bustling players, and if we can work things down the wing, cross it in, we're always a chance.
Yeah, and certainly the Chinese, the Korean teams were getting reasonable results, if not beating some of those sides. So it's really only the Japanese in West Asia. East Asia, that has it over us. Yeah.
Well, the other thing as well is that as our teams play in the Asian League and we see the standard and what we need to do, then we'll recruit players to fit the mould. So I think it's only going to get better.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah, we talked to Asian Champions League. We look forward to seeing Newcastle Jets take on the Pohang Steelers in another in a month after the Socceroos have got through to the World Cup. I had an interview with Glenn Thompson. Glenn is the coach of the Borroloola Cyclones. Borroloola is 1,000 kilometres from Darwin, and he's produced a team from a community of just 600 people that is good enough to take on the nation of East Timor and only lose by a couple of goals. It's a remarkable achievement. It's particularly inspiring because it's an indigenous team, and as football fans and Australians, we love to see the indigenous players making their mark on the game. Anyway, I caught up with Glenn, and this is what he had to say. All right, I'm speaking to Glenn Thompson. Glenn is the coach of the Borroloola Cyclones, an indigenous team from the Northern Territory, about 1,000 kilometres from Darwin, but a fantastic story for all football fans. Glenn, how did you get it going?
Well, it was around about 10 years ago that it all started up here. I worked for the local school, and I just saw a few kids, obviously bored, kicking a Coke bottle or something around, and I said, it's about time they got the round ball game here, and being a bit of a passionate well, missionary of the game, if you like. I got hold of a couple of balls, and, you know, it doesn't take much to start a football game up, a couple of shirts and boots or something, and from there we formed a team. The grades got stronger, and we got some strips and boots, and invited ourselves up to Darwin. We rang a few schools up there and to see if they were interested in putting on a game, and that's how it all came about.
Now, I've got a friend, Richard Jones, who's travelled around the Northern Territory recently and went to many Indigenous communities. Out of all the communities he went to, and I know Richard's met with you, you're the only community that where football goals, soccer goals, are the most prominent.
Yeah, well, that's right. I remember Richard was absolutely buzzed out when he saw that. He told me the story. You know, he said he'd been around from virtually from every community in the West through the Northern Territory and up around into the Gulf, and probably one of the most isolated communities he came to, and he saw the goal with nets and everything there, and I think he was absolutely,
Yeah, well, we still celebrate it down here. We're making a big story out of it. It's great. We love it. And so when you came into that community, Glenn, obviously with AFL being so strong, how come you were able to convert, presumably convert's the right word, these guys to football?
Well, the AFL sort of comes and goes here. It depends on, you know, the strength of the visiting copper or a teacher, maybe a bit of a fanatic, but media, nobody had any coverage of, we didn't have any SBS or anything up here. I got myself a satellite dish, and I recorded a few games, and had some of the boys come round, and we watched a few various FA Cups or something. And
now, I've just seen you on SBS, and they showed the Cyclones playing in the Arafura games against teams like Macau and East Timor. And I guess what surprises me is not so much that you're playing and you've got, I suppose, the stereotype Indigenous skills, but that there are only 700 people from your from that community. And do all the players come from that community? And if so, how the heck are you able to compete, you know, as you obviously did, against other such bigger nations?
Exactly. Yeah, no, all the players are from this community, and there's four main language groups here, and we'd have representatives from each language group, and I mean, it's starting to spread here as well. Our nearest community, if you like, Noongar, is northwest of here. Some of the players, there's quite a regular transit between communities, and they've taken the game back over there. And, the girls as well. The girls are really keen. And we've had, I think last year, we had six girls represent the NT side at the National Identification Championships were held in Coffs Harbour. Six from here.
Yep.
And that was in the under 15 division, and one in the under 17. We've had girls and boys in both school sports teams have gone, and various grades, ages have represented the territory. They've been to Adelaide, Melbourne.
And I believe, did you have one player trial with an A-League side or a youth side? Was that?
Yeah. Our captain, Alistair Evans, with Queensland Roar. And he did quite well. They were very impressed. He came back and he said he's a very light player. He need a little bit of strengthening up in the body side, but he's since worked on that, and he's looking really good at the moment. And the thing is, he's got the commitment. He's keen to get out there and go, and he can see where this could all head to, you know, and he's got the ambition, which is more than anything.
And that was Glenn Thompson from the Borroloola Cyclones. We'll have a little bit more from Glenn next week, and a great story up there in the Northern Territory. Now we're going to talk about the second division as we expand the A-League. We're not happy with just 8 teams or 10 teams, or as the FFA are meeting this week to talk to the 3 bids from Western Sydney, South Coast and Canberra. We may soon be up to 12 teams if the FFA know what's good for them. They'll put in Canberra, because we're clearly biased because we're involved in the Canberra bid.
Absolutely.
But anyway, we're going to talk about the second division. There's been rumours that if we want to get more places into the Asian Champions League, then we need to have a relegation promotion system, and certainly a second division. A lot of clubs in the old NSL were upset that they weren't allowed into the A-League. There's been a particular, I suppose, mainstream branded model met by the A-League. A lot of clubs in NSL and the New South Wales Premier League, Victorian, are jumping up and down with excitement at the prospect of coming back into the second division. Paddy, can it work, and can we have these teams back in it?
Well, who doesn't like the concept of promotion relegation? I was up till
It. Don't we love it when the Georgies go down?
Watching Burnley, you know, earn their place in the Premier League.
Burnley,
just, Liverpool.
That's serious core stuff, that.
Yeah, I know, it's fantastic.
I love watching that Premier League show on the last Monday, you know, when they did the highlights packaging. You know, you've got your Middlesbrough fans crying when they go down, and then you've got your Villa fans chanting at the Georgies going down, and then you've got your Georgies going, oh, I just love it. It's
yeah,
great.
It is, good concept.
And it's also a good concept for the moneymaker. You know, if you had a playoff between a team in the second division playing off against the Newcastle Jets, for example, the crowd would rock
in
for that game, wouldn't
it? Big crowds in desperate moments. But as a concept, very nice. However, in terms of practicalities, and certainly in a big country like Australia, there are some real issues there. What are teams from NT, Tassie, WA going to do? Are they going to be involved in this second tier or not? If they're not, there are going to be a lot of complaints around that.
Okay, well, let's say they are going to be involved. Let's say there will be a team from Darwin, Perth and Tasmania. Okay, maybe 3 from Sydney, 3 from Victoria, and, you know, chucking a couple of Queensland teams. So, okay, that's the model. Do you think it can work?
That's a lot of money. And who's going to pay for that? The FFA? We've expanded already. We've got the Women's League. There's the Youth League. We're not earning a lot of money yet. We've expanded 2 more teams on the A-League. It's a big call to be investing a second tier and have teams from that far away be travelling regularly.
You're talking about travel costs primarily. I mean, the crowd costs, you're not going to be making a lot of money from revenue. You're probably looking at 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 people at a game, maybe. I guess you'd need, you know, the budget for players, maybe $500,000 instead of 3 or 4 million or whatever it's likely to be by then. So you're not looking at big budget clubs and maybe less than $500,000 for players. But you do need, as you say, probably $1 million, $1.5 million to run that sort of operation. Not impossible.
Yeah, the beauty is that we could be working with clubs that are already established, old NSL clubs and these sort of things. But it would be lining up more of the grassroots, the local level football, and moving those into the A-League. But I just cannot see it being economic.
Okay, if we run it on $2 million a year, right? Just
all
to throw
right.
one at you.
We're gonna work it out.
Oh, we're gonna work it out. Here's one model that could do it. Fox buy up the new next TV deal is 2013, so that's probably when it's likely to come into place. Let's say Fox, you know, there is a massive increase in money for A-League clubs, etc. The FFA, as long as they've got money for all the international teams, they've got money for the A-League clubs, that maybe they can pay the salaries of all the A-League clubs, $3 or $4 million each a year. And supposing there was $1 million a year left for some of these teams.
Yeah, look,
could
I accept that it's
the TV
possible,
deal, it could be part of the TV
what you're
package.
Going to get is you're not going to get leagues that are really humming along. You're not going to get big crowds. The A-League's already dropping in terms of crowds. You can look at rugby union. They tried to organise a local league. One of the first things, John O'Neill, who set up the A-League and set it very well on a very sort of one city, one team basis, one of the first things he did when he got back to union was to cancel that local league that they were trying, that smaller league. I think we've got to go with the basics that made the A-League a success. We've got to keep it simple. We can't expand too quickly. And I think the second tier is a nice idea, but I think we're going too fast and too quickly.
Anthony, what do you think?
Well, I think it can. I think that...
Oh, my God. We've got an argument. Here we go. Go for it.
at the moment, there is too much of regional Australia that's locked out. I mean, if you look at the areas, Wagga, for example, how many players have they produced? A big regional centre, Canberra, another regional centre, Wollongong, regional centre, Gippsland, Looking
at Darwin, Tasmania. So that's a good point. Yep. There are lots of regions, and the FFA will be looking at that when they're trying to expand their sponsorship and try and lock in bigger sponsors. But I mean, Paddy's points are, you know, I think a lot of people would agree that financially the crowds aren't going to be coming in big numbers. Is it a sustainable model?
Well, you take Canberra, for example, if they're in the second, we get government, small government support.
Well, we'd be okay.
We'd be okay. I mean, I think Wollongong would be okay. In Australia, take the AFL, they've looked to expand a single model as much as possible. For us, if we want to contribute players to the national team, we need as many players playing at the best level they can. And it's not just players, it's officials, it's people in, it's coaches, it's organisations. And what I've seen in the Spanish League over the last 10 years is small regional centres with one person who said, right, I've made my money, I want to put it into the local team, has used all of their business experience, and bang.
Maybe not, so of course, what in some of the Spanish towns, it's football is the main code, whereas, of course, we've got other codes competing. So I think that is a different argument. But the fact that the FFA are looking at it, we've got only got a minute left or so. Paddy, ethnic clubs, have to ask the question, you know, Melbourne Knights, Sydney Olympics, will the FFA want those clubs involved?
It looks very simple, no. Let's learn our lessons from the NSL. We've had enough scars. We all carry the scars of the NSL. Ethnic clubs, they've got no place. Even economic terms, their supporter base is limited. It's difficult to grow. We've also had, you know, all sorts of social issues with it. We just want to leave it alone.
I think you're right, but I think a lot of people like Mike Cockrell from the SMH is saying, you know, there's a great place for these clubs, but I'm with you, Paddy, absolutely. I think the reality is we can't afford to take a chance. We can't afford to get it wrong. We've got football on the right track, and somehow we have to find like RPL Leichhardt, who have now become the West Tigers. That's the model. They need to change their club to fit in with the broader, where they can attract a broader audience. So I think that's... and I don't think the FFA for a minute, despite what some of the ethnic clubs might be thinking, I don't think for a minute that they're going to go down that track, but I think there are still some people out there misguided. But RP Leichhardt may be the model. They've changed the name to West Tigers, you know, taking on the sort of Balmain type colours, so it now suddenly can broaden its appeal to a broader audience, and who knows, maybe an A-League team in 5-10 years to come.
Well, it makes good sense, not only from FFA's point of view, but from a financial point of view, you want as broad a base as possible to support your club.
That's right. Okay, well, that's it, Paddy, for your first show. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right, thank you.
Did well. Thanks very much.
It was enjoyable.
Talk
about football, I'm okay with that.
Okay, Anthony Hatton, thanks very much for joining us.
Cheers, mate.
Camera listeners, stay with us. And for those lads listening down in Costa Rica, I hope Paddy was as good over in Costa Rica as he was here. And whether you're playing out on a Canberra over or across Australia or across the world in Costa Rica, if you are going to the near post,
get there first.
Near post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.
You're listening to The Near Post, local football show, 98.3 FM on 2XX. And with me in the studio is Anthony Hatton. Good day, Anthony.
I'm back, yes.
You're back. It's great to have you back. Anthony Hatton from Players FC, who will be chatting, interviewed shortly by Peter Fennell. Welcome, Peter. It's good to have you with us. And we're going to start across straight to Russ Gibbs, who isn't with us tonight, but he's listening at home. He's got a wrap of the Premier League. Russ, how are you?
I'm very good, Amy, and yourself?
Yeah, you're looking good. Now, what's the story? How did we go on the weekend?
Well, there's four matches on the weekend, as usual, in the men's Premier League, and we'll start at the top of the table, where Connan United continued their march, carrying on from their championship-winning season last year, with an 8-1 thrashing of Queanbeyan City. Hat-trick for David Lee, taking his tally to 10 goals in only 5 games, so he's certainly on fire. Dustin Wells with 2, Lee Piotrkowski, Taylor Beaton and Callum Reinhardt scoring for Belconnen. George Catenach on his debut for Queanbeyan City, scoring the only goal in response for Queanbeyan. Elsewhere, Canberra Olympics scored a 1-0 victory over Canberra City with Scott Barsley netting the only goal. And NUFC continued their good start to the season with a 2-1 win over Tuggeranong United. Ryan Jones and Tim Womack giving ANU the goal scorers there. And Tuggeranong's goal scored by Mark Shields. And on Friday night football, a very eventful Friday night football, Eamon. O'Connor Knights of Woden Valley drawing 2-2. Hayden O'Kelly for Woden Valley and an own goal with Gordon shot deflected in the 92nd minute, earning Woden a point. Joseph Jadrich and another own goal for O'Connor. But that wasn't the story of the game. 4 sendings off and a mass brawl. Talleth with Kevin Evans receiving red cards for Woden, Elijah Shah and Justin Selkirk for O'Connor Knights. So All in all, a busy weekend. Looking at the table, Belconnen United stay top with 30 points, Camber FC second with 12 from 4 matches, NU with 10 from 5. At the bottom end, Queanbeyan and Tuggeranong with 3 points each.
And so were you out at any of the games on the weekend?
I saw ANU FC play Tuggeranong United, and ANU FC played some good football on the weekend, created some good chances, and were worthy winners. And John Mitchell's obviously got a very good side going there. They're sitting pretty in third in the table at the moment.
And who's coming up? Who's up on the weekend?
Well, in the next round of fixtures on the weekend, Saturday, there's one fixture at McKellar. Belconnen United play 7th place Canberra City, so they should be likely to continue their winning streak. While on Sunday, 3 fixtures. The O'Connor Knights play Canberra FC, Canberra Olympic play Woden Valley, and Queanbeyan play ANU FC. Tuggeranong United have the bye, which means that they play the AIS tomorrow night.
And which would you pick, Russ, as the game of the round next weekend?
It's a very interesting set of fixtures. It's difficult to pick one that stands out completely. If you're going to pick one, I'd say Connor Knights versus Canberra FC. That's 5th against 2nd. It's always a good clash when those two rivals meet. And sure to be a good one on the weekend.
And any news from around the Premier League?
Not much news, in fact, apart from, as I said, George Catenach signing for Queanbeyan City and scoring a goal on the weekend. That's a surprising signing for them. Good player, George Catenach, and he'll make a big difference to Queanbeyan City. But, of course, the big news was the brawl on Friday night with the O'Connor Woden Valley game when Friday night football returned.
Yeah, not a good start. Maybe that's what Friday night's football is going to be all about. I hope not. So, OK, well, thanks very much, Russ, and we look forward to having you back next week.
No problem at all. Enjoy the show.
OK, cheers, mate. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And that was Russ Gibbs, our near post Premier League expert. I've just got the women's scores here for us. Canberra FC were defeated by Belwest Foxes 3-1. And in Western Creek went down to Woden Valley 2-1. And ANU lost to Belconnen United 2-0, which leaves Woden Valley top of the table on 12 points. A big lead. Belwest Foxes on 9. Followed by Belconnen United, Nicole Somers, Belconnen United, former near post host on 7. Western Creek down with Canberra FC, the new team, on 2 points. And ANU bringing up the rear. The leading goal scorers in the Women's Premier League, Jessica O'Brien, leads away with 3 from Thea Wilkinson Shaw. Jessica plays for Belwest Foxes. Thea Wilkinson Shaw on 2, Canberra FC, and Erin Clout, Woden Valley, and Grace Field also on 2. And then a whole heap of others on just 1. So that's the women's table. We've got some news now coming up. Peter Fennell. Peter, what's up for the local news?
Eamon, a couple of items from Capital Football, which I've pillaged from their website, but they're worth promoting. They've just run a very interesting practical workshop on teaching running techniques to enhance speed. Talked to a couple of the coaches on the sideline at junior football on Saturday. Very encouraging. Well done. Capital Football has also got a couple of community football oriented initiatives that are particularly noteworthy. The first is a schools development clinic, and that's somewhere squirrel away on their website too. And they're conducting these clinics in the primary schools in May and June. Well, they have been in May and June, will be in May and June, I beg your pardon, at Aranda, Waniasa, St Thomas More. Now, the point is, if your school wants a clinic, ring them up.
Yeah, a couple of football available to come out and get involved in those schools. And I mean, I think really there don't seem to be many schools on there. And I mean, when I've been talking to other people, Anthony and yourself, Pete, it'd be fantastic to get some coaching going in the schools. I mean, personally, I'd like to see it on a weekly basis, but we won't go into that just now. Any more news, Pete?
Indeed. The second element of this community football-oriented initiative is a very thoughtful one. Always hard to get information when you're trying to advance your club and get things organised and mobilise the legion of volunteers. And they've picked off 3 topics at Capital Football, which they're having delivered. First is volunteer management. Well, they've done that one. But on the 15th of June, they're doing communications, sponsors and grants, that's how to get your money, 7 p.m. at the Woden Valley Soccer Club. And on the 10th of the 8th, they're doing strategic planning. Got to have a plan.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were going to say something. No, okay, no. All right. Okay, continue, Peter.
I was listening intently.
broke the rhythm there.
I'm sorry.
Importantly about this second group of seminars, they're being delivered by people who've been there and done that.
That's good.
Now, the next point I'd like to pick up on is the ACT Primary Schools Cup, Now, it's being sponsored and organised by Curva. That's particularly noteworthy because Capital Football collaborate with Curva for the development of their under-9s, 10s and 11s. The important thing here is that there are seven school regions, and in some of those regions there are up to 17 schools. Now, the competition can only take 8 teams per region.
Got to get in quick.
Got to get in quick. I know things get hard to mobilise at schools at times, but for the principals and PE masters and so on, this is great news for teachers because they won't have to work at it.
And also, it's the kids, it's the sport that their kids play, and they all want to represent their school, so let's give them a chance and let's get signed up to get your school in there. So if you're a parent and you're listening or your kid, get onto your school and tell them we want a team and get in there quick because there's only 8 spaces.
You make a good point. This is about participation, not for selection for greater glory. They'll play in their friendship groups.
Yeah, which is what we want.
And now, futsal news. Oh, beg your pardon, no. Kanga Cup. Must remind you about that. 12th to the 17th of July. Team nominations close 29 May. Weather, probably cold again. Hope it's not as cold and as wet as last year.
Not in Canberra, mate.
But I pulled off a list of teams, which is a week old, off their website, and there are 103 teams registered already.
Fantastic.
So this is quite massive. And the overseas teams include teams from Korea, Cameroon, New Zealand, what is that overseas, and Japan.
Tasmania? You can have New Zealand. Wow, from Cameroon, I like that.
Yeah.
Oh, I like a bit of that African football.
Absolutely. Yep. And if you do nothing else, make sure you see the Singot Primary School under 12s.
I tell you what, they should be playing at Bruce Stadium, the amount of people that are talking about them. I want to go watch them. Yeah.
They're a wonderful revelation, really. Well, in fact, it probably set the benchmark for that age group. Now, the final little bit of news, I want to try and dive into a bit of futsal news from time to time.
Absolutely. We love our futsal.
The first is the Capital Football is running a futsal level 1 coaching course on Sunday the 21st of June. Don't know what their nominations are like, but they're running it at Empower Dome. They're doing it all day. Cost is $120. My rough calculation says that's about $15 an hour, so that's a pretty good rate. Be nice if it was for nothing, but
one step at a time.
But one step at a time, and this is the first course in a heck of a long time. It's being run by, importantly, the futsal assistant coach from the 2008 World Cup qualifier and the New South Wales futsal coaching officer. So you're getting two good people running.
Who are they? Do you know the names?
Just Dr. Hannah.
Yep.
The good course, get in behind it. If you intend to coach futsal, this is a really good way to do it, and it's not a lot of hurt in a day.
No. Okay, good stuff. Alrighty, so
one more, please.
Yeah, go for
one,
it.
One more. Every now and again, something lands in your email in-tray box that makes you stand up and take notice. And I got one of those a couple of days ago, and it was on futsal. And it was from very pleasing news. Now, immediately through my mind runs the thought of Han Berger saying that futsal was another small-sided game. Well, a couple of people have got a new club off the ground. In fact, it's the inaugural futsal club in the ACT. It's called the Boomerang Futsal Club, and it's been set up by Eddie Senator and Kristen Collins. Well done, fellas. They've been admitted to play. This is the important thing. They're fully supported by Capital Football and on the basis that they will support futsal in the ACT.
Yep.
They've been admitted to play in the Football New South Wales Super League competition for 2009-10.
Eddie, well done, mate. I like it. That's big news.
This is a cracking bit of strategic thinking here.
It is fantastic. And I know Eddie's been very involved. I don't know Chris so much, but I know Eddie's, I'm presuming Chris has too. But we know that futsal's got a big, big future across Asia, and a bit of strategic thinking. Get into the New South Wales Premier League. Fantastic. Something our outdoor teams haven't been able to do.
Absolutely. That's the bridge. And it's got many spin-offs. This is not a short notice, I know. I'm sorry. But the important thing here is they're looking for under 12 boys and girls, under 14 boys and girls, under 16 boys and girls, youth men's and an open men's and women's. And you have to be playing futsal here to be selected in one of their teams.
And where are they going to be playing? Up in Sydney?
Yeah, I don't know what the mechanics of it
are. Well, Peter, you're going to get onto that story for us. We need to find out more. That's a great story.
Yep. Now, and importantly, very importantly, this is the competitive edge that our better futsal players will need when they hit the nationals next year.
Absolutely, great. And that's great news for Canberra football. Well done to Capital Football and to Eddie and Chris for taking the initiative. All right, we're finished with the wrap there, Pete, and we're going to have a chat with Anthony Hatton, who will no doubt have some thoughts on that. He has thoughts on all things football. Pete's going to talk to Anthony Hatton from Players FC right after this.
Why was the football player standing next to the heater?
I don't know.
Because he was warming up.
Boom, boom, baby.
That is humour.
That is humour.
On 2XX.
And this is 2XX 98.3 FM, the football show, being streamed live across Australia and the world on the Wide Wide Web, and also podcast tomorrow on the blog www.nearpost.blogspot.com. I always want to say that because I hear them saying it on radio, ABC Radio National all the time. We're streamed across the world. And anyway, go on, let's get into it.
Eamon. Anthony, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, mate.
Lots of smart people in football, probably more smart people in football than any other code. But every now and again, you meet an idea, and one of those is a thing called Players FC, and someone's picked it up and run with it and making their contribution to the greater good of football. Anthony, tell us about Players FC.
Well, it was born out of an idea that somehow the club competition was just missing certain elements in the development chain. So what we did, we started off with an idea taken from our experience doing holiday and community work to give kids more of a fun aspect of their development. But Players FC basically offers three things in their development. One's the ABCs, which is the agility, balance and coordination aspect. There's the football game, and then there's the football skills. And especially for the young kids, and Players FC is about the young kids. We're from the age of 3 to about the age of 9, which is our core market. And we do have some older kids up to 12 as well. But basically, these three components are just as equally important than, say, just the game.
Annie, what makes you different to Woden Valley Soccer Club or Majura?
Well, the first thing is that
In these age groups?
Yeah, well, the first thing is we don't play any competitions.
Uh-huh.
In an hour session on the Saturday, the kids get a game, and of course all the kids want a game, everybody likes to kick a ball, but we don't play in any set teams. The kids will probably be in a different sort of a team each week, whether we're playing a 2v2, a 3v3, or even a 4v3 in the game situation. The kids won't be playing in a set team. If we take an age group, say the under sevens, we've got roughly about 15 under sevens at the moment at the club because we're still a small club. They'll become one social group, but when it comes game time, they're all picked on different sides from each week.
Right. When do you conduct your activities?
At the moment, we're primarily Saturday mornings,
right?
And we do offer training on a Thursday as well.
Right. Do you find your children go and play for a club after they've been in one of your sessions?
We do have. Some of our older kids are registered with other clubs. They'll come to us on a Saturday morning and on the Thursdays, but they're registered with other clubs.
All right. And that's one of the defining and obvious differences between Players FC and, say, Woden Valley or Majura in those age groups. You don't compete externally, that is, with other teams.
We don't compete externally. I mean, I think in the future, as our player base grows and our kids grow older, there is a need and there is a perception that kids want to play against other kids, and we'll accommodate that.
So what's your answer to parents who say, look, I want my child in a team, 8 and 9 is Rubel, but 10 or 11 or 12, and I want them playing in a form team under modified rules and against other clubs? What would you say to them?
Well, certainly at the moment we can't offer that. What we say to parents is that children should develop in a non-competitive environment for as long as they are comfortable to do that.
Mm.
Walking around the fields, there is just too many bad examples of 9, 10, 11-year-old kids who get the worst side of football.
How so, mate?
Well, on the weekend I saw it was an under-10 girls' game. A player got dragged and berated by the coach. For doing something that probably an under-9 girl would probably do normally. I mean, this is because competition has an aspect to it that is not kid-friendly.
What about parents on the sideline?
Well, one of the things that Players FC does is actually we have a thing called the barrier, and parents are kept behind the barrier, which, if you like, isolates the child from the parent. And what we've noticed is that as soon as the child is away from the parent, they can concentrate and focus on their own enjoyment. There's no reference to the parent all the time, see what I did, that sort of thing. It's uncomfortable for the parents to start with, but the kids just love it. And in the end, it's about the kids.
Yes, and well, good point. You do lose your objectivity as a parent, don't you?
Oh, absolutely, as a parent, you do.
So no two ways around that.
You'd agree, Eamon, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, always agree with you, Anthony.
Thank you.
So the core delivery point that you're giving here is the development outside of overt competition, overt external competition, if I could use those words.
That's right.
So you're detuning the tension and perhaps increasing the atmospherics around the experience of the game.
To put it in a cliche, you don't want to take the competition out for kids. Kids love competition. Relays, obstacle courses, I want to be first, that's
certainly
fine.
Certainly do.
But what you do is you defocus the winning. And unfortunately, when you select a team and you put kids into uniforms, they must look like footballers, they must act like footballers, and of course, they must win like footballers. And unfortunately, people get carried away.
The kids have plenty of role models and examples out in the media every day of the week. Now, if I could continue on about what it is you do, it's most interesting. What are the key elements of the Players FC curriculum that you deliver?
Okay. Well, the first one and the first and foremost is do not harm a child. So if you've got a training program, the first thing you want to do is not cause injury to the child. So that's the first thing. Now, that injury is obviously not only physical but mental. So what we need to do in Australia is we need to find committed teenagers who are going to go out and practice on their own for as long as possible to try and come to the elite levels. What you need to do once they're very young in the primary school is give them such a fun environment that they want to come back. And if they can come back once a week when they're 6, 7, and 8, maybe they'll come back twice a week when they're 9 and 10, and 3 times a week further on. What you're trying to do is build up a very enjoyable association with football. And you do that, in my mind, by taking out the parent influence, by taking out the parent coach influence, and trying to eliminate all of the negatives of the game. Now, some people would say, well, it's worked well the other way. But again, there are a lot of kids who don't actually fit into the mainstream. There are kids who come to the game late. For example, what do you do with a boy or a girl who only just starts playing football or sport at 9? Well, in a normal club, they get graded into the lowest team, which has, you know, its fun and its thing, but they're missing out. So you need to give kids the things that give them what we call satisfaction, because we think that enjoyment is made up of two things. One is satisfaction, that is, they're getting ahead, and the other thing is fun.
What do you do then about the young player that's the discipline problem or the badly behaved or disruptive? How do you handle that?
Well, the first thing is you've got to have a good coach. And you've got to have a coach that understands how to handle those things. And we've been fortunate. We've had a lot of advice from people who have been school teachers and psychologists. Group control is the first thing. And it's not done in an overt manner, in a disciplinary way.
What do you mean by that, group control?
Well, for example, instead of saying to children, stop doing that, I want you to do this, it's better to say, let's go over here, there's more fun. So what we try and do is if we try and keep the kids engaged for as long as possible so that their attention is on the activity rather than the idleness and mischievousness.
Look, the reason I ask you this question is I reckon every junior coach meets this, if not every week, at least every second week. And as I wandered around the playing fields while my son was training, who at times has had his moments, I gazed upon some of the training sessions and the at times there was a there was anything between just ignoring the bad behaviour to some lectures, finger pointing, and timeouts.
Yeah.
How do you manage it?
There's a couple of points here. The first thing is the child there because the child wants to be there, or is he there because the parent wants him to be there?
Good question.
The second thing is, the program that we run is because it's non-competitive, a child can have a bit of a timeout. And we get children with, you know, all sorts of attention sort of focus. And what we... it doesn't matter if they stay out for 5 or 10 minutes. It doesn't stay out... If they stay on the sideline for 5 or 10 minutes and then come back into the activity, then there's no harm.
Well, this leads us very... It's a very neat segue into some documents you reference on your website, which are obviously important to you and to Players FC.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they clearly underpin your philosophy. One is a dissertation called Long-Term Athlete Development and Developing Youth Players and so on. You mentioned the number of sessions and so on, and of course that first document deals with that. How's the sense of those documents influenced your thinking?
Well, firstly, the Long-Term Athletic Development by István Bailey is probably the premier document on youth development.
Mm.
And what he says is that any development is long-term. 10 years it takes if you want to go from being, you know, a junior to being an elite.
He's got some staggering information there for any parent who might want to gaze. I hope they do gaze upon your website and read that document.
Well, the other thing too is there's quite a good link on the internet to István Bailey.
Mm.
And basically, he has 7 stages now. The first one is the be active stage. You know, under 6, be active, do as many things as possible, as many experiences as possible, hang upside down, just do all the things that kids should do. The next stage is the fundamental stage. This is where we start to learn of all the experiences, how we can use our body in a sports setting. One of the interesting things about István Bailey's work, and just to tell you that Canada as a whole has taken his program to heart in all of its athletic and sporting endeavours. But he says in the primary age of 8 to 11, which is considered to be the golden age, you should still do 2 to 3 sports. You should do as many sports as possible to get as many experiences as possible. And what he says is that if you specialise in sports early, too early, which is we tend to do in football and in other sports, then that is a negative towards becoming an elite at the older age.
Mm.
And he's talking more about the organised sport. He's not talking about the sport that the kid does on his own, using his own imagination, doing all sorts of things. He's talking about the organised sport and the sport-specific activities at 8 to 11.
Is Capital Football talking to you? They should be.
I've had several chats with Capital Football.
That's good. That's good. This sort of input's very important. Can I just jump you forward? I know we could talk a lot on that one alone, but jump you forward. When we went to the presentation by Hahnberger on the new football curriculum, he got to the issue of the age-relevant effect and its impact on development. Now, I saw you rise to this issue, and my personal view is that Hahn kind of lost his way and got a bit self-contradictory. Can you speak to that issue? I think it's a very important one, and how it might affect academies and stuff like that.
It's a very clear issue. If you look at the national youth teams from around the world in all sports, the children born earliest in the year from the cutoff point have the greatest selection advantage because they mature earlier.
Yep.
So, for example, if you have somebody who's born in Australia in the December, they're clearly disadvantaged in the selection process from somebody who's born in January. Now, Malcolm Gladwell, in his book Outliers, did a fantastic expose on this, and what he said was that this sort of system cuts out at least half of the eligible sportsmen and women. And so what he said is that if you continue on that system, you're still doing exactly what you do.
Exactly. And of course, if we reflect on our, you know, what I'd call the straight meat and potatoes academy type systems, they fall into that trap all the time.
Well, they do because it's so easy to get wrapped up into some kid who's playing well compared to some other kid who's not without taking reference to their birthday.
Yeah, well said. Yep.
I mean, I think the under-20 Brazilian team that won a few years ago, everybody was born in January.
Yeah, there you go.
January of that year, so they were already 17 by the time they went. There are occasions when you get the exceptional child that comes through, but basically the general rule is if you're born earlier in the year and the cutoff is in the 1st of January, you are going to be disadvantaged. You're born later in the year.
Could I just lead you with this, Anthony? I got the impression when Hahn was talking that these were problems that were quite literally have to be solved by the state or territory federations.
Yes.
Did you get that impression as well?
I thought. I mean, obviously we haven't don't
and
have
the how they
all
do
of
it.
They don't have all the information yet. Malcolm Gladwell, in his book, who looked at the British system, suggested that they have two academies. Academies for children born 1st of January, say, to the 30th of June, and the ones later in the year.
There does have to be some flexibility and openness so you can bring people in and out to accommodate them,
that's right,
don't they? Now, can I just jump forward again? And leading question, because we're running out of time, aligned with this, can we reflect briefly, because I know you did watch several of the matches of the recent under-13s, boys' nationals. Could you just reflect on that for a little bit?
On the games on the 13th? Interesting that the styles were completely different across the board.
Yeah.
It was hard to see that we had any sort of national plan. And maybe that's what Hans is talking about, that
perhaps, yes,
if we have a national plan and it's in the academies, then we'll get a better result.
Okay, I'm going to have to cut you off there, Anthony, because the Spanish show is coming up very soon. But Peter Pennell, thanks very much for the interview. Anthony Hatton from Players FC, great to hear your thoughts on the changing game of junior and young football. Plenty of debating coming up, I'm sure, over the years and over the weeks. And also, if you're out there watching the European Champions League, I know Anthony's a big Manchester United fan, so go Barcelona. And if you want more football on 2XX, Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock till 5 o'clock, the Far Post show. We've got about 17 hosts. It's going gangbusters, 2 hours of non-stop football, so have a listen to that if you want that. And wherever you are, whether you're playing indoor or outdoor futsal or whatever you call it, soccer, who cares what we call it, if you're going to the near post,
get there first.
Near post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.